striped. His arms were long and curly, hair was strewn over his beautiful face. He was naked, and the hue of his body reflected that of Lord Krishna. Purport. His bodily features indicate him to be different from common men. All the signs described in connection with the bodily features of Sukadeva Goswami are uncommon symptoms, typical of great personalities. According to physiognomical calculations, his bodily hue resembled that of Lord Krishna, who is the supreme among the gods, demigods, and all living beings. So the point being made here is that Sukadeva Goswami is special. He's not ordinary. So, much of the time in the material world, then the material, the external, is what is seen. Someone externally looks the part that we expect. Then we figure everything else automatically is good. like that. We don't think otherwise. You know, the, but, so therefore, then in the Bhagavatam, it's natural, they will start from that. You'll start because that's what you can see, is physical features. And then from that, you can understand it's very good quality, and uncommon. The common person's beauty, that is their description. Because everybody feels they are beautiful, and anybody who has the same kind of features is attractive to them. Right? That's the natural thing. You know, whatever the species, right? An aardvark thinks the other aardvarks are very attractive, right? So it doesn't matter what species, one always thinks whatever one is, that that's attractive. So for the common, then that's okay. But here they're pointing out something more special. Because these qualities come because of connection to Krishna. In this case, connection to Krishna, meaning that he's always absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Always absorbed like that. So that will bring that quality. Just like we see that Uddhava, he looked just like Krishna. Because he was always absorbed in thinking of Krishna. So he looked the same. Arjuna also had many similar bodily features, same color. Draupadi was a great devotee, also similar. So it's that's not uncommon. Same time from being pious, here, you know, in the material world, you won't get more pious than being liberated from the material energy. Therefore, then also all good physical features were there. So these are uncommon. Uncommon meaning only the pious people will have these. And, yeah. So it says, Prabhupada's pointing out, it's different. So that's the principle. Is then one can see that because of this physical difference, there must be some piety there. And that piety is respected. Is when Sukadeva Goswami came, just by seeing him, they knew this person was something special. So they all stood up. Right? So that's important. That's mentioned in the next verse. That has no good point. He was blackish and very beautiful hue due to youth. He was blackish and very beautiful due to his youth. Because of the glamour of his body and his attractive smiles, he was pleasing to women. Though he tried to cover his natural glories, the great sages present there were all expert in the art of physiognomy. And so they honored him by rising from their seats. So they just saw him. Women see he's beautiful, so they're hanging around and looking. But they're not necessarily respecting, right? But the sages, as soon as they saw him, then they stood up like that. They say, here is somebody who has all the symptoms of a transcendental person, right? Especially the means the color was correct, the particular features that are mentioned here were correct, and especially one of the main is the long arms, like that, because that you only find in the Mahapurushas. Some of these others you'll find in others. Anybody who is a little bit good looking will have a fleshy collarbone and full chest, these kind of things that will be there. The chest will be broad. These are standard things. It's interesting to note, though, in the modern society, it's the opposite, that the body is made out of seven elements. The outer layer is skin. That's the first layer. The next layer in is called fat. And then after that, you have muscle. And after that, then you have blood. So blood's not going to do so much. Muscle will do something to some degree. But it makes it a little bit hard looking. A little harsh. The bones aren't going to do so much for you. The marrow, the semen, these. So the real thing that makes the body, gives it its shape, is the fat. But unfortunately, in modern society, fat is considered not good. So then, according to the Vedic definition, therefore, people nowadays do not look beautiful. Because any smoothness in the body, fullness in the body, is all fat. So there must be some fat. If there's no fat, one cannot be beautiful. That is the definition of the acharyas of the Vedic literature. So this modern thing to starve yourself into, you know, boniness, you know, then that is, it's not considered attractive. Neither as having the auspicious symptoms of an advanced personality, or a, just a common, mundane person just looking good or not. So that's why he probably says different from the common person, because common persons, they always have their uniqueness. The Pandavas, when they were hiding, when they went into the kingdom of Virat, then they all just decided what they were going to do. You know, Yudhishthir was going to be the court jester, and the Arjuna was going to be, Brihannala was the, you know, the dancer who was going to train the girls of the palace. The Bhima would be the cook, Nakula and Sahadeva would take care of the horses and cows, Draupadi would become Sarindri, she would take care of the queen. So they worked out all this, what their names would be, exactly what their deportment, everything would be. Then, after they decided that, then they figured, well, if we just walk in, okay, Brihannala, right, it's a eunuch, right, dressed up in like very colorful and gaudy clothes and looking very, you know, whatever. Then it might kind of put the people off if he's got the Gandiva bow hanging on his shoulder. Because Gandiva bow is famous up to Brahmaloka, because the Gandiva was created by Brahma. So everyone in the universe knows Gandiva, you know, and also then all the marks on his arms and whatever. So they thought, this will not look good. So they decided they'll keep their weapons. So they tied their weapons up nicely, hung them in a tree. They found a cemetery, and then there was a hill, and on the top of the hill there was this big sami tree. And then in the sami tree on some big branch that won't break in a storm, they tied the stuff, their weapons underneath that branch. Then, to keep people away, they hung a dead body in the tree. Wrapped it up, hung it in the tree. They figured the smell, everyone will say, okay, it's a dead body. And so no one will come. So then, after doing all this and they're leaving, then, you know, the common people were asking, what are you doing? You know, what's happening here, you know? And they say, oh, according to our 180-year-old mother just died, and according to our custom, our family tradition, we hang the dead relatives in a tree. Right? And so then everybody, oh, okay, yeah, why not? Cool, you know, it's okay. You know, yes. Everybody's very liberal in the Vedic culture, so any local customs and all that is kind of okay, yeah, why not? You know? Did you hang it by your hands or by your feet? You know, like that. So the point is that they got away with it because anything goes in common culture. That's the point. The common culture, you make it up. It sounds good to you, sounds good to others, you do it, hey, okay, why not? You know? That's the thing. The common person, it feels good, do it. I mean, that's it. So it doesn't matter. So it can be there. But what Prabhupada's describing here, what Bhagavatam's describing here, is something completely different from this, something unique, something special. In that these personalities, then they manifest these qualities of Krishna. Because all the auspicious symptoms are in Krishna's body. That's mentioned in Nectar Devotion. There's 32 symptoms. This is what was bewildering to Nanda Baba and the Brajabasis, is that this child had all the symptoms auspicious. And the only one who has all 32 generally are God or his very close associates. Otherwise, no one else generally has all these. So Sukadeva Goswami was manifesting enough of these that people, the sages who knew these symptoms, you know, of the body, then they stood up to take, I mean, they noticed this and then they stood up. Any questions on this? Yes.
I heard a story a few times about the Shukadeva Swami that he actually was banned from the spiritual world.
You heard the story that Sukadeva Goswami is a parrot from the spiritual world who came to recite Bhagavatam.
Yeah, it's somewhere else.
Means that if you're going to recite something, it means just like, okay, means a human being, there's so many qualities could be there, right? But now if you think about a parrot, and you have a pet parrot, what is the unique thing about the parrot that everybody, you know, is special to the parrot? Yeah, speaking, repeating. So it's natural that repeating the Bhagavatam or the glories of the Lord, then if a parrot does it, then that's naturally going to be their predominant feature. Right? Because that's what the parrots do in the pastimes, is they speak the glories of Radha and Krishna, you know, like that, and accordingly. So that's what they do as their service. All they do is talk about the glories of the Lord. So their whole service, their whole existence is Bhagavatam. That's what the parrots in the spiritual world do. So all they're doing is discussing Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. So then it's natural they will be the perfect person for it, describing it. Like that. Others describe and engage in it, the other associates. But the parents specifically, their service and their engagement in the pastime is describing their qualities. So it's natural.
So it is actually a fact that he is better from the spiritual.
So is it an actual fact? Meaning we have heard that it is an actual fact. But I wouldn't be able to give you literature. I don't know. Maharaj could. No, he was asking, is Sukadeva Goswami specifically a parrot from the spiritual world? He has heard that. Oh, you don't know. They haven't let you in on any of the inside scoop, okay? So Maharaj hasn't been talking to any parents lately. He's been very busy traveling, so he hasn't been able to sit down and, you know, spend some quality time with them to catch up on, you know, what's the latest, you know, like that. Means the form, can the devotees change form? It depends. The form can be changed if it's valuable for the service. But if it's not, then no. Just like Jamuna, she'll have the form of a river and the form of a gopi. So you'll have like that. Even the demigods, they have their pleasant form that they interact with God and the devotees, and then they have their forms that are less pleasant. You know, like, you know, a naked lady running around with her head cut off, holding the head in one hand and the blood spurting out into a pot she holds in another. You know, and then the other hand she's got a chopper that if you get too close, your head will be in the same condition. It's not exactly what you'd call a very sweet, you know, form, but it's one of the main forms, you know, like this. So it's very common that they have many, many forms. Or they expand. Like Prabhupada mentions in the Transcendental Roadshow, is that the moment an aspect of the pastime finishes in this universe, it moves on to the next universe. So that's another definition of eternal. Because, you know, Krishna is just cutting off Shishupal's head. And as soon as that's accomplished, as it's being accomplished, it's manifesting in the next universe and just happening and just happening. So that aspect is always going on. So to do that, then you take 125 years that Krishna is present, and, you know, and spread and take that by moments. So that means you have to take 11 moments in a second, you know. So you have to figure out how many moments in 125 years. Then That would be how many basically universes it's being manifest in, you know, at the same time, basically. You know, plus there'll be an overlap as it finishes here, it moves into the next. You know, so it's, that's the window. So that means that Arjuna and others, they're going to have like that many expansions. Mother Yashoda, things like that. So it's, so that's the most common. But changing of form, some of them do, some of them don't. But you do have forms that look the same, don't look the same. I think Maharaj and them, they were working on. Because you have the eternal past, the apricot lila, unmanifest, for those from the spiritual realm, they don't make a distinction between unmanifest and Goloka and unmanifest and Gokul. To them it's the same. They don't see the difference. Just one is up, one is down. We tend to make, well, there's Goloka, there's Gokul, and then there's what we can see. We make it into three, they only keep it as two. So the pastimes, just like what's going on in Goloka, in Navadvip, in Svetadvip, and what's going on here at present with Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, those are considered one pastime. Then, 500 years ago, they manifest where we could see them. You know what I'm saying? So that means that all these places, they're all going on at the same time. You know, so they have all these different moves because different things are changed. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. That means the pastimes are going on with him in Vrindavan. At the same time, it appears he's left Vrindavan. And his mood, the mood of that, is there. So he's always with the devotees in that form. Right? At the same time as we see a form of him outside Vrindavan. So I'm saying, just like Krishna has all these different expansions and forms, so the devotees have those forms also, you know, because they remove the obstacle, means they remove, excuse me, that's another thing. Vishvakshena is an associate of Lord Vishnu. He is the commander-in-chief of the Vaikuntha army, right? So even there where there's no problem, still they keep an army, just in case there is any problem. You know, like that. Now, he removes all the obstacles, he's in charge of the army, but in this place, Ganesh removes the obstacles and Skanda takes care of the army. So his potency's already been split. You know what I'm saying? So that's splitting from there, because originally there's only Krishna and Radharani. Then there's Balaram and their associates. So eventually everything you see is there. Lakshmi is Radharani, you know. Like that, the personalities in Dwarka, they're expanded from her. So you have the ones that are similar to the, you'll say, she would go with Krishna to the heavenly planets? Satyabhama, that's Radharani, because it carries the closest to the mood, but still it's Swakya, not Parakya. But it'll have a similar flavor. But also Lakshmana is also left. But all the gopis are expanded from Radharani, so all the queens are actually her. But Satyabhama is closest to the full manifestation of, you know, in other words, Satyabhama will be the full manifestation of left-wing Swakya. Right? So like that. So that's there. It's close. But it's different. So it is a different manifestation. At the same time, it's the same. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Yes. Okay, so the question is those who go from material, perfect their devotional life and establish themselves in the Krishna's lila, so do they become servants of those? Yes, that's the whole point. We're servant of the servant. We aren't the servant. That Krishna makes that point clear, is if we think we're the servant, then we're not the servant. Real servant is the servant of the servant. Right? Because even you take Radharani and Mother Jashoda, the ones that actually are the servant, but they don't consider themselves the servant. Radharani thinks everybody else is. She's just, you know, like that. So that's the proper mood. The servant of the servant. So that's there. Because everything is, means Krishna is everything. So it's already there. So our existence is already part of His everything. So it has its, we have our place. But our relationship to Krishna is through the devotees who are serving Him. Does that make sense? Okay, what do you do if the devotee doesn't have the qualities, auspicious qualities? Manu deals with that, and he's saying that the natural thing is that if someone's pious, they're going to be born with auspicious symptoms of the body. But he makes the point that if someone has the proper character and follows properly the directions given by scripture as a lifestyle, you know, in other words, you follow the devotional process properly, then that overcomes all inauspicious marks. So therefore, in the body of a devotee, inauspicious marks don't have any meaning. Right? That's not, it's not important. It's very minimal, because the power of good character overcomes that. Because how do you say? When it's prominent, because when we say someone is pious, or like a demigod, or like that, that's because it's predominantly pious. It's not 100%. You don't have pure goodness in the material world. And if they're a surak or that, it's predominantly bad. It's not that they don't have some good qualities. You know? Like that. So that's the element. You know, you'll see demons when they're fighting, someone loses their weapon, they also put down their weapons. That's, you know, sure, there's some good quality. But it's predominantly they're atheistic and all that. Does that make sense? So predominantly doesn't mean that there's not something else there. So these faults come by bad thinking, bad speaking, bad activity. Does that make sense? So because of this, then something will be there. You know, harboring bad thoughts can create birth in a low family. You know, that explains sometimes why you'll have somebody who is so elevated, but seemingly has taken, you know, their appearance in a very common or low-grade family, would, one would think that it's a disqualification. But it will come from some thoughts that were maintained that weren't good. Someone takes birth in low-class families, but you can see obviously that they themselves are not of that character or quality, because they come forth from there very easily or very quickly. So that's why those that really know the scriptures, they don't take so much the physical seriously, especially the sages in that. It's more common, it's more important in your mundane social, the physical appearance. Because if it's good looking, it's considered nice. If it's bad looking, it's considered not so nice. So amongst the grihastha, the social circle, then the good looks is more important.
Yeah.
Chaitanya Prabhu said the beauty of a knowing person is knowledge. So if someone has achieved knowledge, automatically the rest is also important.
Yeah.
But that's what you're saying.
Yeah, no, what I was saying is that. You want to say something much? No. The basic thing is that by proper understanding and proper behavior, that's actually beauty. Because physical beauty, it's nice, but the point is the interaction. You know, it's just like you have your new clothes. So because they look good, that's what's nice about them. But now sometimes it's not uncommon you have some old clothes, but something you really like. But they look ragged and they don't look good, but you like them so much because of they're so comfortable. Right? So, therefore, it's the beauty has its limitation. More important is its actual ability to interact. You know, it's just like probably generally most people would choose having association with somebody who may not be the most good-looking person, but is very pleasant and nice and reliable and loyal and considerate, and you know that could be constant, rather than a beautiful person who wouldn't have any of those qualities. You know, in other words, good character will always be taken over beauty. You know, that's. Okay.
Character is something of the mind.
And
the bodily features, the external features, actually don't rather than the federal features. That's what I think you're talking about. We saw many times in one day,
we don't see that the bodily features change. Maybe you're not looking carefully enough. But the point is what is beauty? You know what I'm saying? What is beauty? Like I don't know. I haven't seen them recently, but they used to be. I kind of got the idea that they were related. There would be two devotees who would come in wheelchairs. They'd wear, I think, saffron and like that. Okay. We'd see them come here also occasionally. Very nice devotees. Very, very nice. You know? But, you know, physically you wouldn't take them as much to look at. But. So the point is you can see the change. You see all the square western edges start to disappear. You see a fullness, a roundness like that. Unless the mother's on a diet. But otherwise than that, then you'll see that their actual natural beauty comes out. You do see the change. But now something like the limb or things like that, that's not there because that's not important. The point is Prabhupada gave the thing is that you get a nick on your finger because you're performing devotional service, it's only a nick. It should have been you lost your arm or you were killed. Because Krishna reduces. So there's something to gain there. Because ultimately there's a point that's also made on the karma. This is being explained by the... I forget where it's being explained. No, I can't remember. Is that you're performing your karma, right? Means your activity. You are, let's say, by nature inclined towards the grihastha ashram. So you're in grihastha ashram because of your inclination towards it. Right? So due to previous karma, therefore you have those values in the mind, so that manifests as your situation, your activities. Yes? That attachments are there. Now by performing those activities with knowledge in connection to Krishna, you lose your need for that situation of grihastha ashram. Is this understood? So that means you finish the karma. because only devotional service can you do it. Otherwise, if I increment, it'll slowly, 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 over millions of lifetimes change. But here, in one life, you lose your need for it. But that doesn't mean that it has to be given up, because you don't have a need for it. That means you could do it, or you could not do it. Right? That's actual indifference. Modern indifference is actually negative. I'm indifferent means I won't do it. But actual Vedic indifference means it doesn't matter if I do it or not, because it doesn't matter to me. You know, it's like there's so many chairs in a room, you have no sense. Oh, I can sit here, I can sit there. It doesn't matter. But someone whose room it is, no, I always sit in this chair. My guests sit in that chair. Right? But that doesn't mean he dislikes the other chairs that he doesn't sit in. That's why we have difficulty applying indifference in our devotional life, because we use the kind of like the modern connotation. Yeah, it means hate is indifference, but hate's not indifferent. Hate is an opinion. Indifference means it doesn't matter. So the point is, therefore there's no need to give up that grihastha ashram if it's favorable for your service, because it doesn't matter if you're going to have to be situated somewhere. That situation is there, then what's the problem? You're able to do the duty. You don't need to have the supportive women, but it's because you're there and you're working with them. It's not a problem for you to tell them that they're great and wonderful and how important they are. Because that's the way it works. Just like, you know, you scratch the cats under the chin, you know, like that, you know, then, you know, you say this to women, you know, so it's just the way it is. You know what I'm saying? So that's actual indifference. So the situation doesn't have to change. So that's the point is the person has a bad leg, it doesn't have to change. Because of his bad karma, he's got the bad leg. So it annoys him, it disturbs him, it's an obstacle, it's a problem. But as he becomes purified, it doesn't matter anymore. So there's no need for it to change. Then it becomes actual preaching, is that here's a person, he has a problem like that, and he's perfectly situated in devotional service, completely happy, not worried about it, and life goes on. So hey, you know, I only have a little bit of a problem, you know, like that. You know, sometimes my knee hurts, or you know, I tripped and my toe hurts, and I'm forgetting Krishna. But this person has it permanently a bad leg, and he's perfectly absorbed in Krishna. So then, it's a good example. It's preaching. So there's no need to change. So that's the point of indifference. We take it that it has to change, but then that means it's fruitive. It's actually karma. You know. Yeah, but it doesn't need to. Bhakti Buddhi Yoga means it doesn't have to change. Arjuna did not have to change his situation to become self-realized. He was self-realized sitting on the chair shooting arrows at all the people that, you know, half an hour before the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, hated. But now he's just doing it because this is how he can engage his situation. You gotta be somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Just like you gotta take prasad. Right? You walk into the prasad hall, right? 500 people can sit down. Does it matter which of the 500 seats you sit in? For honoring prasad? No. So the point is wherever you're sitting, you honor prasad. So it doesn't matter what situation or what station in life you are, you just serve Krishna. But the same principles of that indifference, those apply to everybody. Right? The same philosophy of what is sannyas is meant for all four ashrams. The same control of the senses and absorption in studying the scriptures, you know, in a practical way and teaching others practically is the same. Though it's the varmakasa, that's the same for everybody should be doing that. You know, the ability to take care of guests and be considerate of other people and all your relationships and deal very nicely of the grihastha, everybody's supposed to do that. You know? than the brahmachari, that he's submissive to his authorities, that he's, you know, in the mood of service. He, you know, the scriptures are important for him. Like that, he's not trying to expand his life more complicated than it needs to be. That's for everybody. But if it means you can't do all of them at the same time, then at least you do this one and focus on it and make it good. Then when you move to the next one, you'll have two. Then when you perfect that, you move to the next one, you have three, then you get the, you know, then you have four. The Sukadeva Goswami worked out all four while he was in the womb. So therefore he's different. He's not sitting there down telling all these women, hey, get out of here, you know, women, you know, me and Swami here, you know, beat it, you know. He's not telling them that. He doesn't care. He's standing there naked. Couldn't care less if they're there. Because he doesn't need them. And that's why they're there. You know, just the physical beauty, but also that he doesn't need them. Right? Krishna doesn't need the living entities. Therefore, the living entities are attached to Krishna. That's just how it works. So, but he doesn't care. So on one side you have the women there, you know, saying how beautiful he is and how nice and how nicely, you know, his physical movements and everything about him is so perfect and all that. At the same time, you have all these kids there that think he's a complete madman, they're just goofing on him and laughing at him. Hey, look at this guy, he's naked and this and that, and how stupid, and you know, whatever kids do, you know. I mean, they can goof on you and you're fully dressed and look perfectly normal. Let alone if you're acting abnormal and you're walking around naked, then you can think, imagine what they're going to say about you. So these two extremes, punk kids just goofing on you, and young, you know, girls, you know, just looking at you, and he doesn't care about either. Right? That's sannyas. How much is it possible for a jiva? Completely, 100%. He's an example. He's a jiva also. That's the platform. The Goswamis were on that platform. Right? But he's acting as an avadhut. So therefore, there are always a few examples of avadhuts that you can function here fine and not care about it at all. Otherwise, like the Goswamis are taking some consideration so that we can relate to them. Right? But in doing like the Goswamis do, we may take it too far. So therefore, there's always the example of the avadhut that you can function here not caring for one thing. Rishabdev didn't care. He's an avadhut. Right? Here, Sukadeva Goswami is an avadhut. The Python Sadhu didn't care. He's an avadhut. Right? Most others are all showing us how we, in our position, whatever station it is, we can serve, you know, nicely in the simplest way and most Krishna conscious. But just so that we don't take the trappings of the position too seriously, therefore the acharyas also give example of avadhutness, where you don't have to interact with this place at all. You'll be taken care of. A little baby, like a 2-year-old child, a 1-year-old child that can get up and walk around, right? They can't talk, right? They have no social skills. They have no occupational skills. They don't have anything. Are they taken care of? Right? And they're taken care of despite that they're walking, right? If you ask any mother, they're trying to dress or bathe the child, feed the child. They're moving. And still it goes on. They're perfectly fed and healthy. So that's the point. The avadhu is just moving and the material energy is taken care of. Right? You understand? So that's the thing is, but because of our ego, we think, no, I have to do it. No. That doesn't mean we're lazy. He's not lazy. That's the other misconception. Is just because you're not endeavoring doesn't mean you're lazy. No, you're so absorbed in transcendence that you don't worry about the other. You know? Same time as here, then the material energy is taken care of. then Abad being an Abadhood is fine. Right? Then it's okay. But as we see in the case of Raghunath Das, he didn't care. But then Krishna personally and Radharani personally would come to take care of him. Right? Not the material energy. Because he was so dear that they wouldn't let their expansion take care, they would come themselves. Right? I've seen that myself. You have a big man, and he's got all kinds of secretaries and servants and personal assistants, but when it comes to certain things with certain guests, he won't let them do it. He'll do it himself. They'll say, I'll take care of it. Say, no, I'm doing this myself. I've seen it myself. Something easy. Take the guests out to the car, or even drive them to some place. He'll do it himself personally. He's got a driver. Right? But he'll drive himself because of the importance of the relationship. So they're doing themselves. So in that case, the Sanatana Goswami told him, says, this is not good. Therefore, build yourself a house. Right? But if the material energy is taken care of, then it doesn't matter. This, the being an Abadhood is fine. Oh, okay. Well, then you should be clear. See, rule number one is ask a clear question, get a clear answer. Right? Means if attachment's very strong, making an unclear point eventually will get you what you want. But if you're not working on the principle of attachment, then you got to be specific. So, Jamunacharya, the mind is a material element. Right? The mind does whatever it does. It accepts and rejects. So all it does is keep going through all the experiences, because everything that you experience is experienced in the mind. Right? So the mind always is looking for happiness and looking and to remove distress. So it will constantly be going through everything that is what has been experienced and just deciding this is good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. You know, accept, reject, like that. So even you come to the liberated platform, the mind is still, while you're functioning within this form, it's still going to do its same job. So it's still, because he was a king, therefore he had queens, therefore then the mind thinks up, you know, all kinds of intimate situations that he had with them. But as soon as they come up, then it's not of no interest to him. So that's going to come up. So this idea that the pure devotee is this guy sitting in a cloud in an Om sign and nothing goes wrong and nothing ever happens, that's for impersonalists. So if anyone ever thinks that, how could an advanced devotee ever think of something weird or have a problem, that's because of their contamination of impersonalism. The advanced person is a person, he's got a mind. The mind's material, it functions in its way. Right? Just if we have a dog and it's guarding the property for Krishna, it's still going to act in the same way as a dog who's outside, you know, doing the same thing. So that's the way the mind works. But the point is that's why it's the example is given of a river that is flowing into the ocean. It means the desires are flowing into the ocean of the mind just constantly. That's just the way it is. But the difference is the advanced person doesn't take any heed to it. He doesn't think it's important. That's the difference. It's not that they don't come up. You know? Right? It's a desire for liberation. No problem. So therefore, liberation, I want no problem, so that means liberation means nothing material happening, means no activity. Therefore, when I'm advanced, my mind is going to be completely blank. Right? Does that make sense? But that's impersonalism. The mind is going to think. It's just habit. Panchadevita was in early days he used to travel, because his devotees would all travel around together with Prabhupada. So they're in the station. You know, when you're pulling out of the train station, you know, the window's moving, you know, and you see people come in, but slowly, 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 until it starts to become a blur. You can tell those people. So Parshavi was, you know, there, Prabhupada was there, and there's there, and people started to go into a blur. And then there was a young girl on the platform, and his mind focused on it, even though it's a split second. You know, and he asked Prabhupada, how is that? Everything else is a blur, but my mind can figure out, here's a good-looking girl, and focus on it, and I actually see it. You know, because he was sannyasa at that time, so I'm not trying, you know, like this, or look. He probably says, just have it. The mind for, you know, unlimited lifetimes is always looking at beautiful girls, so therefore, you know, it just, that's what it does. You know? You know what I'm saying? So, it's just the way it is. So, if we accept that, then we just know we don't have to take it seriously. The problem is we think that good is nothing's in the mind and bad is something's in the mind. Right? But if we understand good is thinking of Krishna and ignoring the mind if it's not thinking of Krishna, and bad is, how you say, taking the mind seriously when it's not thinking of Krishna, then it's a whole different ballgame. Does that make sense? So therefore, when we aren't the mind and the mind dreams up all these crazy things, we don't have to take it seriously. We don't have to get involved. You know, it's like you have some crazy person sitting in the side of the room, you know, that you live in and always coming up, you know, hey, you know, we could run for, you know, president, you know, like this. You know, so, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, great, you know, okay, yeah, next idea, you know. So, hey, we could bogey drive out the first floor window here, you know, it's like a, you know, so yeah, I think it goes on, you know. So you just have to get used to that you're kind of living with a very strange roommate. Like that, you know, it's like, means in the, how you say, it's if it's taken to extreme, it's called schizophrenia, but in other words, you can just ignore it. You know what I'm saying? That's how they cure schizophrenia, is that all the people that the mind creates that are walking around and talking to you, you ignore them. And they may be there, but they don't interact with you anymore. So the same way, the mind's there, it comes up with stupidness, and when it's stupid, you just ignore it. And when it's nice, then you interact. Then it will decide interaction's better than being ignored, so therefore it will start to naturally bring up the good things. Right? But then it's, you know, it's not that smart. That's why you have intelligence. Intelligence is smart. Nobody ever said your mind is smart. You understand? Okay. Okay, so we'll end here. Natraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Prabhupada ki, Sarveta Bhaktivinda ki, Tanya Daidong.